This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show from Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist. Here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Row 6 with 91 degrees. How you doing there, Mike?
Oh, I don't know. It's not 91 or 96 in this room. It's like 37, and I'm freezing to death.
I'll turn it up for you.
Oh, good. Thank you. Today, we have kind of a two-pronged show, and I have a special guest with me, Jim Daniels from the Koi Club here in Douglas County, and he's going to tell us a little bit about the koi auction on June 12th and the koi pond tour on June 13th, which is a Sunday. And so, Jim, welcome to the show. And
thank you, Mike.
Tell us what you want.
Well, this is the Oregon Koi and Water Garden Society, which is just a group of people. It's a social club of people that like to keep koi and water gardens.
Mm-hmm.
And we get together and talk about what we do and how we do it, and generally kvetch about problems and how to fix this and how that works and why you're having this problem, and help each other. It's kind of a self-help organization, if you will.
So how long have you been involved in the local group?
Well, I came to this house. I bought the house in the end of 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And it came with a pond, which my wife liked. And then last minute, we found out it came with the koi also.
There were fish in it?
Well, yes, and pretty nice ones. But the owner found out what it cost to ship large koi to Tucson, mm-hmm. and decided to just include them in the offer for the house. So we inherited koi, and I'd had an aquarium a few different times, and mm-hmm. been okay with that, but never had any koi experience. So here I am, 5 really nice large koi.
Now, when you say large, what size are you talking about?
2.5 to 3 feet.
Really? And yeah. What's something like that weigh?
Oh, I don't know.
10 pounds?
It's hard to get them to sit still on the scale, you know.
Would you say 10 pounds or more than 10 pounds?
I would guess 10 pounds is probably a pretty reasonable number.
Huh.
But you're not going to hang them up like you do a bass after
right.
you catch it and
right.
weigh it. But they're big and they're kind of on the fat side because we feed them too well. And it's just very relaxing to watch them.
Mm-hmm.
So we got started with that, and the next thing you know, we found the Koi Club. Actually, we found them at the expo in 2016 was when we discovered they were there.
Uh-huh.
And the club has an open offer. Anyone that wants to join can join, just fill out the paperwork. And there's no charge for the first year. So we joined, what the heck? And then after that, they hit us with the big bill of $24 a year.
So. Oh, man, how could you? You'd have to save up $2 a month to get that one.
There you go.
When you say paperwork, what are you talking about?
Just a simple, who are you, where are you, how can we send you an electronic email with a monthly newsletter, or do we have to mail it to you, or how do we do it? And that's it. And we'll have that out at the Koi Expo also if mm-hmm. anyone wants to come and join the club. We generally meet at one of the members' ponds
mm-hmm.
and sit around and have a little potluck and hang out and drink a soda pop or whatever, and visit and talk about our fish.
Mm-hmm. So when you show up, does anybody say, where's your papers?
No, not exactly. We're pretty much a social organization.
Uh-huh.
And it's more about the camaraderie and sharing our problems and our mm-hmm. happiness with what we're doing and just enjoying this person's pond where we happen to be meeting.
Now, the show that you're going to put on, where is it located?
That's in the parking lot at Sherm's Thunderbird Market over...
Okay. Right along the street.
Across from the hospital, kind of. And we're going to take up a nice chunk of the parking lot, and we'll have some vendors there. Mm-hmm. People like Saving Grace will be there, and there'll be some other people with different things to show. There's going to be a pond builder, someone that makes his living building ponds. Mm-hmm. We'll probably have a few other interesting things to come and look at, and maybe some things for sale for your yard or garden.
Oh, cool. Cool. So it's free.
It's free.
Yep.
Walk in. All it's right. free. The only thing that would cost money is if you want to go on the tour, we're going to hit you for a great big $5 for adults.
Now, on the tour, what do you do? That's the next day.
We will give you a list of the ponds mm-hmm. that you can go visit from 9 to 3 on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. So it's not a group thing?
No, not at all. Kind of simple directions, and you go at your own speed. Uh-huh. When you get there, you sit and visit with the owners.
Okay.
And enjoy the pond with them and find out what it's all about. To me, there are a lot of clubs that put together a tour, and they rent a bus, and everybody gets off, and now for the next 40 minutes, you're at this one pond. So the owner is snowed with 25, 30, 35 people all at once.
And lots of questions.
but that's no fun for the owner, and it's no fun for the people that are trying to get there. This way, by not having any set order you should go in or anything like that, you go, you see the pond, you enjoy it, and that's what you're there for.
Mm-hmm. Oh. So how many members are in this club, the Koi Club?
I'm thinking it's right about 100 right now.
Really?
And only a few of them really are active, but they all kind of stay in touch. And we've got members as far away as Eugene and Medford.
Oh, really?
In fact, our president and his wife are in Medford, and they have quite a setup with an above-ground koi pond.
I see. So will they be at this event on the 12th?
Oh, they'll be here. Probably won't be including that one on the tour. It's a little far for people to run to Medford.
Right. Okay. No, but I mean, will they come here?
Oh, yeah, they're coming here.
Okay.
In fact, they will have some fish for sale there, and they're donating a fish who's, I think the size class is probably called Lunker.
Lunker?
It's a nice big fish. His name is Hoover.
Hoover the fish. How long is Hoover the fish, would you say?
I'm told he's on the 3-foot range.
And, 3 feet.
He's pretty good sized fish.
Jeez Louise. Now, how old would a fish like that be, do you think?
You know, they can grow that big in about 4 or 5 years, or they might be 20 or 25 years old.
I see.
I understand that they live to be 100, but I haven't hung around to find out.
So what do you feed a fish like that? I mean, koi in general. Is there a specific special koi food?
There are a lot of special koi foods, mm-hmm. and you can buy some decent ones at the DC Co-op and Coastal and Tractor Supply. But the really good ones all come from Japan.
Uh-huh.
And they do make a difference in the color of the fish. They will intensify the color. And the price of food is, there's a big range.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, I buy a less expensive food that's about $50 for 25 pounds.
Wow.
But then there's another one.
Here locally?
Then there's another one that I bought some of that's $75 for 15 pounds.
My goodness.
That gets up there. And some of the real high aficionados, if you will, mm-hmm. kind of look down their nose on that. Well, that's the ordinary food. You've got to get this special, you know, the little round pellets are hand rolled by virgins or something.
Oh, goodness gracious. So I guess it's like a all the vitamins and the nutrients.
Yes.
And the, it's just not food, but it's chock full of stuff.
Yeah, and a lot of them, I think, have fish in them.
Really?
So they're
cannibals.
More or less. The other thing that people do is they feed in the off season when they aren't eating much, mm-hmm. they feed Cheerios.
Yeah.
And they feed things like thin slices of watermelon and orange.
Hmm.
And other berries, blueberries and things they'll throw out there. And some of the fish really like it. I put some watermelon on my pond, and then I had to drag it out because it was kind of turning funny color and no one paid any attention to it. But there are people that do that. There are also people that feed their fish by hand.
Yeah.
They'll have them eat out of their hand. If you go up to the Dogwood Motel,
yes,
about 26 miles out on Diamond Lake, he has some fish that'll eat out of your hand, or at least will for some people.
Well, he has a fantastic pond, his big pond there in the back of his motel.
He really does, and it's quite a story how that pond survived the fire, because he lost half of his buildings.
I know.
And the firemen and some other people got together and went out there and rescued them, and they dragged them down to Medford to an emergency holding tank.
Really?
And cool. Kept him for a while until he felt the water was safe to bring him back in. Uh-huh. But the fellow out there, Norm Call,
right,
he was a koi judge for a while in competitions.
Yeah.
And really knows his stuff. Very personable guy.
Yep.
And it's kind of a nice little place to hang out if you want to get a place to spend a day or two up in the
Norm and I have been friends for a lot of years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a hard guy not to be friends with.
Oh, yeah. He's really
easy. He's just
easy.
A nice man.
He's really easy. And he loves those koi, and he knows so much. He's just an encyclopedia of knowledge.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things I really don't have any knowledge of is some of the nomenclature.
Yeah.
Every color design, every pattern has a name. Mm-hmm. Different sizes, different ages have different names, and mm-hmm. it's all Japanese stuff. And I speak about 20 words of Japanese, and I'm done. after I leave the sushi bar, I'm through.
Yeah. Well, you know, most of the koi ponds that I've seen are very well maintained and clean,
right,
and all that. Now, when you have murky water, what is the best thing you can do to clear that water?
A lot of times that's a filtration problem.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have filters, you got to dig them out and clean them out and redo that. You'll get green water in the summertime if you have too much sun.
Yeah.
And we're fighting a little bit of a problem because we had a giant elm tree in our backyard that all the neighbors hated and we hated, but it was shading the pond.
Yeah.
So we took it out, and now we're kind of fighting until we get more shade back.
I see.
Shading the pond is pretty critical to keeping the green algae from growing in it.
So is there a chemical? I mean, I've gone to PetSmart over here and looked at all the different, things to supposed to clarify your pond and everything. And I've tried some of them, and either I'm doing it wrong or they don't work.
I believe that some of them work if you really know how to do it. And mm-hmm. if you talk to Norm, he'd probably have a lot more information about that. But I have not had to do that. And myself, the algae and stuff is generally short-lived.
Mm-hmm.
If you really, really want to get the algae out, you can add a UV filter, which runs all of the water out of your pond through an ultraviolet light that kills all of that, and then back into the pond. It's an expensive process.
Yeah, I was going to say, it must be spendy.
You know, to imagine a 1-inch or 2-inch pipe that flares out and there's a great big UV bulb and a waterproof housing. And, they're expensive gadgets and they will help. To me, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm happy with the pond that I have, which is...
And I've seen your pond. Yeah, it's a neat little pond.
It's a neat little pond. It's a wet spot with rocks around the edge.
Right,
and the fish are happy, and I'm happy, and I can sit there and drink my coffee in the morning and watch them.
And you had some pretty good-sized fish in yours.
Yeah.
Now we got to make our sponsors happy.
Okay, let's make them happy. We'll be back with Jim Daniels and Koiland.
All right, we'll be right back on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This one doesn't work.
Are we back?
We are back. What's up, guys?
Well, we're talking koi. We're talking fish. We're talking funny colored big fish that sit around and eat and look pretty, and they relax you when you look at them. And my special guest today is Jim Daniel of the Roseburg Koi Club, or what do you call it? The Roseburg?
Oregon Koi and Water Garden Society.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. Pretty
Oregon
pretentious.
Oregon Koi and Water Garden Society.
For a bunch of people that get together and yak about koi.
So anyway, we've been talking about the upcoming koi demonstration or show and auction over at Sherm's parking lot on the 12th of June, which is a Saturday.
A week from this Saturday.
A week from this Saturday. And the hours are from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. And the auction is at 2 p.m. You're going to have a real auctioneer that talks really fast?
Well, actually, Norm does that. Norm Call, and he's pretty good at that. We bag the fish up in bags with numbers on them and get them ready to travel. And then he holds it up, and he tells you a little about that fish. Mm-hmm. And people who are interested in adding a fish to their pond or two can bid on it. And the prices are pretty darn good.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what's the range on the prices?
At the auction, I've seen a little over $200. A couple of years ago,
For one fish? Okay.
Well, you have to remember that one fish in 2019 sold for $1.8 million.
Well, yeah.
But that one
here in Roseburg.
No, that was in Japan. Had a big, long pedigree and, you know... they could trace his lineage back to who knows when.
Yeah.
But that's a pretty reasonable price for the fish that are selling here. Mm-hmm. We have had some excellent fish. I almost bought one that was about $100 and found out later that it, on the open market for koi people, that's one they pay over $1,000 for.
Wow.
And that was at the little auction here, and we have some pretty good bargains. Jeez. If you need a fish for your pond, this would be the place to be.
How much is a cheap fish?
Oh, I bought a fish for $3 one time.
there you go.
And it wasn't any bigger than the width of my palm of my hand. Now it's about 8 or 9 inches long and growing very fast, and it's kind of fun to watch them grow.
Yeah, yeah. You know, when I built my pond years ago, my neighbor, Albert Mason, has koi, and I don't know why, but he brought me some extras that he had, and he dumped 7 of them in my pond for me, and they were, 6 inches long, and they were all orangey and orange-yellow, nothing fantastic coloring. And over the years, I live out in the boondocks, and so consequently, I think I've got blue herons and everybody else using my pond as a restaurant. Right now, I've got one koi left, and it's white. Now, it wasn't white when it went in, but it's white now. And then, so I threw some goldfish in there. And they're doing really well, too. I don't know if they're compatible or not. Is that okay?
There are clubs of people who keep koi and goldfish together.
Uh-huh.
And there are a lot of people that do that. They get along pretty well. The goldfish are a pretty different looking fish for the most part.
Oh, yeah. I can tell them apart.
as far as your koi and your neighbor bringing them, every year about this time, you'll see the koi acting kind of funny, and sometimes they'll spawn.
Mm-hmm.
And very often you'll have tiny, tiny babies they call fry.
Yeah.
And if they grow up and the frogs don't get them and the garter snakes don't get them, you'll have some little koi in your pond.
Yeah.
Now, you were talking about the raccoons and the blue heron. That's a big problem. If you have a dog... Generally, the blue heron don't want any part of that dog.
Oh, I know. They hate my dog.
And the raccoons will come in, and they're sneaky. They'll come in. But if you built your pond so there's no place that they can step in and stand in the water.
Well, they can't. Mine goes
right. If it has a really steep edge and maybe some rocks above that edge that stick up over the edge, that's pretty discouraging to raccoons,
good.
They say.
Good.
So,
because I don't think I've had any raccoon problems, but those blue herons, I'll tell you what, they're They fish my creek and everything else.
So oh, yeah.
They're in there, not every day, but I see them at least once or twice a week.
Yeah, one of our members talks about a pond that was up above, across the freeway from the fairgrounds on the hillside.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow a river otter came in.
Oh, goodness.
All the way up from the river.
Across so, I-5?
over or under or something, across I-5.
Geez.
Got in there and cleaned them out. And river otter kind of fixated on the fish's liver, so they ate the liver and left the fish.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was just devastating to this woman that had this nice pond with
how in the
fish.
Heck would they know that there's, from the river all the way across I-5, there's
you've
some koi
meat?
You've
got me. You've got me.
Oh, jeez.
You know, just no clue.
Man. So how do you protect fish if you have, if you're out in the boondocks and do you do netting, or is there the depth of the pond enough protection, or are there anything, is there anything special that one could do to prevent predators?
Generally, the depth of the pond and the steepness of the sides is a big deterrent to critters coming in. I did see a pond in the greater Portland area that had an electric fence about 6 inches high with two wires running all around. And he said he lived just above a little creek, and he said the raccoons are just thick in that creek bed area. And they come up, and so they would come up and harvest his fish, and he got tired of it, put up the fence. And he said you'd be laying in bed at night and you'd hear them squeal when they hit that electric fence. And they wouldn't come back.
Good.
They'd tell Charlie, hey, Charlie, don't go up there.
That guy's got an electric fence, man. Don't do that. Don't do that. Well, you know, and going back to my pond, and like I said, most of the fish were dinner for a blue heron.
Yeah.
And then one day here, not too long ago, in the last couple of months, me and my brother were looking at them, and the water was fairly clear, and I saw a totally black fish that was about 7 inches long. And I thought, I'd never had a black fish in there before.
Oh,
where in the heck did that come from?
That comes from the genetics somewhere back.
Really?
And it's just kind of unpredictable among koi somehow. People will buy a large number. One of our members bought 100 small fish about 2 inches.
Mm-hmm.
And brought them in and raised them and kept culling them out, if you will, and came up with a few really spectacular fish out of 100. But it's hard to know what they're going to be when they're little. Like I say, the little tiny black one turned into a kind of pretty one. I bought one that was really plain white, nothing going on, that's growing up and developing a kind of a gray scale pattern on its back that's very pretty.
Huh.
And I'm told that it could turn golden, but we'll have to wait and see a couple of years.
You know, here's a weird, maybe not weird question, but one year I was down in Mexico, down in Cabo, and it was winter, you know, but it was warm. And the hotel that we were staying at had a stream running all the way around their courtyard.
Yeah.
And to get from the lobby to the pool area, you had to walk across this little wooden bridge. And this stream was, it was not filthy, but it was, you know, a lot of algae, a lot of seaweed, and I'm standing there looking at it one day, and I see these koi swimming around in there.
Yeah.
And I thought, how in the world could they live in that ugly place? But they were pretty good size, you know. They were a couple of feet long, and there was maybe half a dozen that I saw. But this thing went, it was probably 5 feet wide, and the depth maybe 3 feet, something like that, and it went all the way around the whole courtyard, fairly extensively. And I was surprised that they looked good and they looked healthy, and so apparently they're a tough fish.
Yeah, the big thing is oxygen.
Uh-huh.
If they have enough oxygen, and as far as the algae and stuff, a lot of times they're eating some of that algae.
Are they? Okay.
And my fish, I know, are keeping the rocks cleaned off somewhat, and they kind of like that. So. Hmm. Some of them will eat lily pads. Luckily, I have trained mine not to.
How do you train a koi not to eat a lily pad?
It's a long day. No, they just don't like them for some reason, or they're not interested. But yeah. They use those to hide under, and I've got some frogs now that are doing funny things in the lily pad. And maybe we'll have some baby frogs this year. Who knows?
And will the koi eat those?
Probably not. Really? Probably not.
They don't like live bait?
But the garter snakes do.
I see.
If you have baby koi or baby frogs or anything like that, the garter snakes just love them, and that's just the way nature is, I guess.
Well, at my, I've got another koi pond that's a little more sophisticated at the nursery in the, in the back part. Did you see that or not?
I saw a very, just a big flat pond, nothing exciting going on to my eye. Well, I didn't see the back one.
Oh, okay, yeah. The front one, that was the very first one we ever built, and there's no fish in it now, but it just runs water. But the one in the back, we made a series of waterfalls and put a lot of rock in there, and it, you know, and very decorative, big rocks and stuff like that. And my koi back there are probably in the 2 foot range, at least, and they're, you know, good and chunky and big. And we don't feed them much at all. And and I was thinking, that's why I asked you earlier about the you know, what kind of food do I buy? I don't know what's good, but I remember somebody telling me about the cereal.
Missouri Platinum food is what I happen to buy.
Missouri Platinum?
M-I-Z-U-R-I, I think is the name. M-I-Z-U-R-I. And that's kind of the top of the line of the less expensive
and
foods.
I can find that at the co-op? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Missouri, what was the second name?
Platinum.
Platinum food, huh?
They have several different grades. And that one I spent a little time kind of reading the labels and the contents and all that, and that one seemed to be fairly good. It doesn't have all the fancy stuff in there to make the colors come up as well.
Yeah, because I when I'm shopping for koi food or a pond clarifier or something like that, I have no clue. And I ask the clerk, and they'll say, well, we got this one, and this one. And but I don't get any real information like I'm getting
from
you.
And that's exactly why you join the club, because you'll talk to half a dozen people at a meeting who have been through the pond clarifier and the the other filtration. I mentioned the bog filter to you. Bog filter is just a place where the water is pumped up to a little higher level, and it runs slowly through gravel. And as it goes through the gravel, there's a buildup of beneficial bacteria that eat all the stuff that you don't want back in the pond.
I gotcha.
And very clear water comes out of the bottom of that bog filter. Rolls right back into the pond.
Yeah. I don't know how I would change my operation at home or, you know, to...
You'd be surprised.
Really?
Yeah,
okay.
It doesn't have
Are you going
to
have some of those at the koi show that I could see?
Yeah, there's... I will show you, if you come by my house, I'll show you where I'm putting mine, but I don't have it there yet.
Right.
Just down the street from me, there's a fellow who has two large bog filters.
Yeah.
One of them he's growing basil in. I think the other one he was trying tomatoes and didn't have much success. But you can grow all kinds of things. There's a fellow up in Kent, Washington, we went and saw, who... little cooler up there, and he has pretty cold water coming in. He grows wasabi in his bog filter.
Jeez.
And supposedly you can't grow that except in the clearest mountain streams and things like that. You know, there's a lot of legend about how hard that is.
We got a commercial here. We will be back with Jim Daniel and the koi country.
All right. We'll see you guys in a couple of minutes.
Okay.
News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240, KQEN.
All righty, we're back. 440 and 92 degrees. You guys still hanging out there?
No, we left. We're over at the Dairy Queen across the street.
There you go. Get me something.
Okay, I'll put a banana split.
There you go.
Oh, gosh. No, my special guest today is Jim Daniel of the I better get this name right here, the Oregon Koi and Water Garden Society.
Hey, that's it.
Jeez Louise, good thing it's written down here. I never remembered that. The OKWS.
That's what we call ourselves, yeah. I brought in a bunch of slides, but I can't find the switch to turn the camera on here.
Well, I don't think we can. Okay. So, you know, slides are not my department. I just talk. So anyway, today we're in a different studio, so we can't take questions. And that's kind of weird, but because... You know, questions are what I survive on, but this is fun. This is good because I'm learning a lot, and I hope whoever's listening is getting some ideas. And if they want to do something like this, these are the people to see on June 12th down at Sherm's parking lot from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday the 12th, and they'll have all kinds of koi experts down there who raise these things and know how to take care of them and know how to build ponds and filters and all that kind of stuff. So what kind of crowd do you usually get down there during the day?
You know, I think we had probably 100 people 2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And last year, of course, we kind of missed.
Yeah.
But I would expect a good 100 people, maybe a little more, because I think Roseburg's ready to get out and do something. And this is a good outdoor, open-air event.
Yeah, and the fish don't have to wear masks.
That's true. That's true. You were mentioning calling in. If you need to call somebody and ask about tickets to the Sunday pond tour, we have a phone number in 541 area. It's 601-5100. And she can help you with tickets and that sort of thing. She can also help you with questions about the club and becoming a member.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just generally a good number to call if you have any kind. The lady there is Lori, and she is a certified koi keeper, which is a title bestowed upon people who spend a couple of years studying all the ins and outs and the technical stuff. And I haven't done that. I have studied the coffee drinking stuff around my koi pond.
I'd say I'd like your way.
I need my morning drug therapy, and I have that big cup of black stuff, and it works really good. And that's the part I have studied. I keep the koi for the pleasure of having them there.
Yeah.
I don't keep them to show. I don't keep them to compete. There are a lot of people that compete in koi shows where there's judging and prizes to be won and championships. I'm just not that way. The competition doesn't do it.
Okay, now that's an interesting aspect, the competition. What are the judges looking for to say this koi is the champion and this guy took the booby prize?
Oh, it's myriad of things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the shape of the fish, the coloration, and how uniform the color is, how clearly the different colors are defined from each other. They don't kind of blend into each other.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of details like that. I spent a day and a half at an event where we learned all about what to look for in a koi and how to judge the very finest koi. And at the end of a day and a half, this very distinguished judge who was teaching the class, he said, and the real answer is, if you see a koi that you like and you want it in your pond, you should buy it. Don't worry about all of this.
Good.
And I thought that was really something to take with me because it's really true.
Right.
You can buy some very expensive fish. I can send you to a fellow who has a lot of $1,000 fish and a few $20,000 fish.
Mm.
And the last time I was there, he had a $50,000 fish.
Mm. You're locally?
Oregon.
Okay, that's local.
And he has some kind of hidden away in a place because he doesn't want the general population wandering in there.
He is.
Fishing. Yeah. Yeah, there are some people in the area that have some very fancy fish.
Mm-hmm.
He goes to Japan every year, and he buys up in the entire offspring of one pair of koi.
Huh.
And all of those offspring are then shipped here, quarantined, blood tested, and inspected by a special vet who's licensed to do it before he sells them, that they are disease-free and parasite-free and all of that.
So we do more for fish than we do for people.
Probably, yeah. It would be nice if we did that much for people when we bring them in. That's another story.
Different show.
Yeah. The thing that you want to be concerned about is if you're buying fish from just anybody or you don't have any idea of the source of them,
right. They
can carry parasites in that get to all of your fish and pretty soon kill all of your fish.
Huh.
There's also in Asia and somewhat here, there is something called KHV, koi herpes virus, kills fish. You bring in a fish that has it, it carries in the virus, it spreads to all your fish. Pretty soon all your fish are gone.
I'll be darned.
And so there's a big push to eliminate that. And
is this something visible that you can see on the fish?
No, you got to do a blood test.
I see. So
that's why every one of his fish, and he brings in hundreds every year,
Jeez. Every
one of them has a blood test. They pull a scale and look at it under a microscope and do all these different things to test this.
For some reason, I've never envisioned a fish with blood.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's like they got blood. I guess
you never watch Wicked Tuna?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they catch that big tuna and there's blood everywhere.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, golly. So what are the most interesting, is there a koi that you've seen in your career here as a koi master that you just were amazed by? I mean, the color or the size or anything like that?
The size, the one that I mentioned that was $50,000 was a very notable size. I would say it was well over 4 feet.
Jeez.
And beautifully shaped and not an exciting color, but it was huge.
Huh.
The other one that's pretty
interesting. Excuse me, how old would a fish like that
be?
No idea.
It could be only 6 or 7 years old.
Really?
It could be 50 years old. They grow in their young years mostly.
Uh-huh.
But there's a fish that is at one of the ponds here in the area that is blind, was born blind.
Mm-hmm.
And that fish does very well.
Mm-hmm.
No eyes.
We're talking
up at the Dogwood Motel.
Yeah, right. I've seen it. It's black.
And it's a good-looking little fish, and there's just no reason to get rid of it.
Right.
But it absolutely has no eyes.
And there's other fish in the in the pond with him it seems like
somehow it knows when there's food go after, and
maybe the hearing is extra good.
Who knows? But the whole thing is, it again goes back to, what do you like?
Yeah.
What makes you happy to see?
Yeah.
I have one fish that we got when we bought the house that has very long fins and very wispy and just gorgeous fins. I have another one that I think is really pretty that's gold with a scale pattern on its back that's very defined scales and very clear pattern and just really neat to look at. And I have a couple of other fish that are nothing special necessarily, but I enjoy them, and so I'm not getting rid of them.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of what you like, what you want to sit and watch, and maybe once in a while grab a little one and see what it turns into.
Yeah, and in my back pond at the nursery, I have one that's kind of black and white.
Yeah.
And then one that's almost a solid orange, and then there's a white one. And I think there's 5 of them in there. And they're all different colors. They're neat. Just neat to see them. And you walk up to the edge of the pond, and they come on over and say hi to you, and throw some food in there, and they like it.
There are also fish that change color somewhat during the year.
Ah.
One that I saw was black with white lips and white markings here and there, and supposedly in the wintertime it turns all white.
I'll be darned.
And wintertime's another interesting thing with a koi pond. That is that your koi pond is going to have ice on it.
Right.
Some people's ponds freeze over entirely.
Right.
Koi are fine.
Yeah.
When the water gets to be about 50 degrees, we stop feeding because koi, being cold-blooded, cannot digest the food.
I see.
And so you don't feed them anything. It would just sit in their gut and rot.
From when to when, approximately?
Every year is a little different, but mm-hmm. when you realize it's cooling off, you start watching the water temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever it gets to be 50 degrees or even really close to 50 degrees,
mm-hmm.
you just stop feeding them.
I see.
And then once it's over 50 degrees for sure, day and night, you start feeding them again.
Uh-huh.
And the depth of your pond, again, comes into play here, because if you dig down deep enough, if your pond is 6 feet, 7 feet deep, it's going to be the temperature of the soil down that deep,
mm-hmm.
which is going to be more constant and probably warmer in the winter.
Really? Okay. You know, one time my at-home koi pond froze over. We had, you know, tremendous cold. This is years and years ago. And, well, we're going to break.
Can we hear that story on the other side?
Sure. If you insist, yes.
Okay. We'll be back again in a couple of minutes. News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All righty, 454, 92 degrees, and let's find out what happened when Mike's pond froze over.
Oh, you know, I mean, it did. And my special guest today is Jim Daniel from the, I got to read this because I can't remember, from the Oregon Koi and Water Garden Society. And we're talking about the upcoming event on June 12th at Sherm's. It's a koi expo. And if you want to see these fish and talk to people who really know how to raise them and keep them and all that, that would be a good thing. No admission charge at all. And on the next day, a Sunday, there is a koi pond tour from 9 to 3, and it costs $5. But the Saturday event's free. You just walk up and say, hey, let me see some fish, and he'll do it, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, I was starting to tell a story about when my koi pond in my house froze over solid, and I panicked. I didn't know. I thought, oh, my gosh. I mean, it was thick ice. It was, and I tried to break it with a board and stuff. It didn't work. And so I went to, I think I can't remember where I went, but I got this round ring, and you plug it in the wall, and it heats the water. And I put it, you know, and you just put it on top of the ice. And as it heats the water, of course, it all melts, and within no time at all, your water is free of ice. And I thought, well, that's kind of an ingenious thing, but it's used for cattle.
Absolutely, yeah. For horse troughs and cattle troughs.
Yeah.
And the downside of using those is they use a lot of electricity.
Yeah, but it didn't take that long. I only had it for, you know, a couple hours.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I rented it. Yeah, I must have rented it, or somebody loaned it to me. I can't remember. It was years and years ago. But I thought, well, what a neat thing. Hey, just stick it in there and it everything melts.
See, one of the things that happens, too, is the colder the water is, the more oxygen it will hold.
Ah.
That's why there's so much life in the water at the poles.
So I don't have to panic when the ice
don't
comes
have to
on
panic.
Top?
And the other thing is, being cold-blooded, the colder they are, the less oxygen they need.
I see. But it also stopped my waterfalls.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had to disconnect my pumping system and all that so I didn't burn it out.
Yeah, ours stopped during Snowmageddon, and there was quite a bit of time before it came back, and then came back fine.
Yeah. Well, you know, you've given me a lot of interesting thought here, and you I hope you have a good turnout at your event.
Great.
And I will be there. I'm coming.
Good,
I want some more information.
Okay. And if anyone wants tickets for the expo, but they can't, tickets for the pond tour, excuse me,
mm-hmm.
and can't make it to the expo, you can call right here in Southern Oregon. You can call 601-5100, and she'll hook you up with tickets.
Okay.
That's 601-5100.
And that's 541 at the front part
Southern
of that.
Southern Oregon.
So, yeah, Southern Oregon. Okay. Sometimes you get these. I got clients that have area codes of 909 and 810, and I'm thinking, where in the world are they from? But they're right here in Douglas County, so they brought it with them from wherever they came from.
As people get older, they learn what a wonderful place this is, and they migrate.
I know, it is. I've lived in a lot of places, but I'll tell you what, I love Douglas County. I'm never going to move from Douglas County, and I've seen other more beautiful places, you know, higher mountains, you know, the Tetons and glaciers and stuff like that.
It's so pretty someplace else, and we decided we're going to be here, and we're gonna move out either by hearse or ambulance. There's no middle ground. That's the only way we're leaving.
Oh, gosh. Well, thank you for all your time and information. You know, I learned a lot, and you made up a list of questions for me that I never really got to, and I had a list of questions for you that I never really got. I got to a couple of them, like how large do they get, how old do they get, and where they come from, where are they native.
You didn't get to my question about fishing for carp, or
Fishing for carp? I am not.
They're just carp.
They're just a fancy carp.
Highly sophisticated breed of carp.
Well, there was a place down on the Russian River where I lived for a summer in Healdsburg, California.
Oh, yeah.
And there was more carp fishermen down there than you can shake a stick at. And the Russian River ran through it, and it's like the South Umpqua. And they had a big dam, and right below the big dam, like the Winchester Dam kind of thing, they were all the carp fishermen every morning down there. And they'd catch them, and they loved them. And I thought, what in the world? Why'd you eat that ugly thing?
it's one of those things. I think in the South they eat more of it than we do here.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's a good way to prepare it. You know, you just don't stick it on the grill and cook it.
And the legend is that koi are poisonous.
Ah.
Probably not true.
Yeah.
But they don't want you to eat them.
Well, thank you again, Jim. It was very interesting.
Thank you for having me.
You'll come back some other time, okay?
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for listening today. We'll see you next week, and I have another special guest next week.